from scratch, from scratch, from scratch, from scratch, from scratch.
Welcome to this week's From Scratch. I'm Martin Cousins and...
My name is Nigel Payne.
And I'm Nick Shackleton-Jones.
Wait a minute, Nick. He's shot in there. Wow. I like it. I like your style. Yes, dear listener, we have Nick Jones on the line. And this is the second consecutive week we've managed to speak to an author of a new book through the same publishing house. There is no deal here. We're not suddenly going through the Kogan Page Forward catalogue. So we are delighted that we've got Nick. You've got a new book out, so why don't we let you just introduce yourself, just say who you are, and then Nigel is going to come in and give you a bit of a grilling, and I might add my two pennies in too. So, Nick.
Hi, sure. So I'm Nick Shackleton-Jones, officially Director of Learning and Performance Innovation with PA Consulting. And my day-to-day life is helping organisations who are trying to kind of modernise what they're doing with learning. And I've been doing it for quite a while. I started out as a psychology lecturer, and I think I have a somewhat maverick and provocative place in the industry, I'd like to think anyway.
Right, Nick, thank you. Thanks for agreeing to talk to us. And we're going to talk about a book that is called How People Learn, subtitled How to Design Education and Training That Works. When is it actually being published?
3rd of May.
3rd of May, so another month or so. So that we just have to assume that hardly anybody listening will have heard of the book, let alone read it, because it's not available yet. So the first question is a really simple one, which is, who is this for? I know in the book you said it's for people who teach other people how to learn or teach them stuff, and for everyone who wants to learn. In other words, the entire world. But who have you got in mind when you started writing the book?
It's a really interesting question. Well, I find most questions interesting, actually. I think it's an interesting question for me because you should always have your audience in mind, and that's kind of the heart of what I do, and it's heart of what we're saying about learning, is that you should start with the audience in mind. So I have thought about it a little bit. It's kind of three audiences. It's people who work in learning and development. So people like you and I, who try and design learning things that are better. And secondarily, it's people who work in education. So some of the stuff that I write is about public education and how the education system could be better. And then there's a third audience, which is just people who are interested in how they became the people that they are. I mean, we all become who we are through a process of learning. Somehow life shapes us into the individuals that we become. And so for anybody like that, anyone interested in how one becomes what one is, then I think it's an interesting book.
What do you think will be the outcome if this book is wildly successful? What will change? If I read your book and I take on board what it says, how will I be different? How will learning and development improve? And how will I have a greater understanding of how I become who I am?
So that I also find an interesting question. My background is philosophy and psychology. One of the things that I've noticed is some of my great heroes in the era of philosophy have published books which basically nobody ever read. Nietzsche published a book called Thus Spake Zarathustra, which he admittedly himself said was the greatest gift ever given to mankind. He published it and I think he sold 150 copies. David Hume, who's another of my kind of philosophical kind of heroes, published something called A Treatise on Human Nature, which he said fell stillborn from the press. Nobody bought it. And so it's hard to say, really, because when you say if it's successful, the measure of its success might be that nobody takes any notice of it at all or buys it. So I think that's a distinct possibility. But I guess in a kind of fantasy world, people would take it to heart and they would understand that learning is not what we thought it was, and they would start to change things, and they'd start to do things differently, and we would have an education system that works a lot better for people, and people are a lot happier as a consequence. So I guess that would be great.
You're very scathing about formal education, school-based education. You see it as, you know, people sitting in rows doing absolutely nothing about learning for years on end, not just for hours on end. So what would you want a teacher to take? Let's just focus it down. I am a secondary school teacher teaching, you know, year 8 or year 9. What would you want me to take away, and what would you want me to do differently if this book is resonating?
So I think a really good model for how education should be is a conversation. In any decent conversation between two people, they have a degree of care for each other. They actually literally care about the other person, otherwise it wouldn't be a great conversation. And you see that in certain ways. They take time to listen and to find out what matters to the other person. They don't just blather on about whatever matters to them. And we have an education system where that is the fundamental problem, which is that everybody's treated in the same kind of systematic way to the same materials. And what my book points out is that, or suggests, is that all learning is governed by the things that we care about. So when you have somebody in front of you who's going to learn, their learning builds on the things they currently care about. You might have somebody who cares about dance and somebody else who cares about mechanics, and somehow you have to build on that existing set of concerns. And at a very practical level, I will sit with my daughter's teacher, and I've been a teacher and I know what these evenings are like, and the poor teacher is given some sort of quasi-scientific set of measures and is supposed to convince me somehow that my daughter is on track but has room for further improvement, a whole load of stuff which is more or less made up. And what I really want to know is, what does she care about? Do you know, as a teacher, as her teacher, what are the top 10 things that she cares about? And how are her future capabilities and concerns going to build on those? So if she's somebody who, you know, cares about being an astronaut, how are you going to take that and shape that into something which is fulfilling in her life later on? And that is an idea, not just a set of practices that isn't happening. It's an idea which just hasn't really been grasped yet.
You sound a bit like Ken Robinson when you talk about that, the element. You've got to bring out what makes people tick and help them become the person that they can fulfill their potential based on their interests, rather than just grind everyone along the same path, regardless of interest, aptitude, or anything else. Are you a bit Sir Ken-ish in that way?
I think the education debate tends to polarize people. They're either at one extreme. I think Ken's at one extreme, which is all it's all about your passions. You've got to find your passion. And I'm not all that way there. Or the other extreme, which is that education is all about, you know, fitting people into society. And I guess, well, the obvious thing to say is it's a bit of both. So what we should be able to do through education is take the building blocks, somebody's passions, if you like, or concerns, the things they care about, and actually shape those through this kind of interactive conversation of really understanding what matters to somebody, but also introducing new concerns. So I wouldn't align entirely with Sir Ken, because I don't think it's just about finding your passion. I think it's about exploring your passions, if you like, about having those passions grow and develop through the interactions that you have with people and the challenges that you encounter. So in an ideal system, when you came in, somebody would really map systematically in the way that marketing does. You know, Google and Amazon really know what you care about because they want to sell you stuff. But we don't care in education. We just say, sit in the seat, here's the curriculum. We would really understand who you are as an individual, what your pattern of concerns is in a scientific way, and then expose you to challenges and experiences which help those concerns and cares develop and blossom into something else. So it's a slightly different approach, but I agree it has similarities.
What would you want to happen in learning and development in organizations? What really excites you about what's going on at the moment, and what drives you completely insane?
I think there's a process and two kinds of things, to be really crystal clear. So I think the process, we can call it design thinking, we call it user-centered design, the sort of stuff Cathy Moore's doing, the sort of stuff I'm trying to do with 5DI, really putting the learner at the heart of the process, really understanding what they're struggling with in their work and helping them with it. And David at Loop also makes a similar point. Why don't we just kind of help people to do the job? You know, and then they would learn as a consequence of that. And then there are two kinds of things. Well, if you want to do that, okay, very good, Nick. That sounds good. What do we do? There's two kinds of things you can do. You can design resources, you know, which help people as they're working. Good body of research that says that's far more effective as approach. Atul Gawande, check this manifesto, and so on and so on. Just design helpful stuff for people. Or because not everything is something you just want to checklist. Sometimes you do want to build capability or shift how people care about diversity or safety, or design experiences. So things which will really shift how people feel about something and give them a chance to practice and develop some capability. And that's the kind of stuff that Roger Shank is doing with his kind of narrative-based curricula. So for example, an MBA, you know, don't just dump a whole load of theory on people, actually build a simulation of what it's like to run a business and let people have a go at that.
Give me an example of something going on at the moment that you think is really top-notch and that points the way for the rest of us. Can you give a specific example of a program, an experience, whatever it might be? You don't have to mention the company unless you want to, but I'd like to get at my hands around what is going on that is different.
I'll give an example which I was fortunate enough to be involved in. It was an organization going through major transformation, and they'd been sort of throwing money at traditional conventional training and predictably wasn't having any effect. They needed leaders and a senior management team who had a completely different outlook on life, who understood lean, who had this kind of Silicon Valley mindset, who were experimental, fast failing, and they weren't like that at all as a business. So the way that we tackled that problem was we said, well, look, we're going to do this very differently. Let's map out all of the challenges that they would face in this new world if they actually transitioned successfully. It would be things like getting to know a completely different customer, you know, rethinking your products, restructuring your organization, hiring different people, handling difficult questions at conferences. And what we did was you build an 8-week program with one challenge a week that felt real. So you'd be sent a PowerPoint deck and told you're joining a Future Worlds conference tomorrow, and you know Elon Musk is on as well, and you're going to have some tough questions from the audience. You know, good luck, off you go. And so they would go through these challenges. It would feel real. It would make them sweat, and then they'd be observed by people who were experts, and they get feedback. And so it is, as I say, it was a challenge-based series of simulations that reshaped people by actually giving them a chance to kind of practice some of the skills that they needed. I mean, look, you can look back at apprenticeships. I mean, apprenticeships effectively you predate a kind of modern system of education and have been the predominant way that people have learned for a long time. It's kind of a, you know, just giving a guided practice opportunities.
Yeah. So one of the things that resonates all through the book is practice. The idea that you've got to, you actually have to do stuff. It's no point in just doing things in abstract. You've got to do things practically. But based on a more in-depth understanding of what's actually going on in your brain and what's going on in the world out there. Is that a fair summary?
Yeah, because people think, well, look, Nick, there's nothing new in what you're saying. You know, learning by doing has been a big deal for a while. But my point is that not everything you do changes you. I make mistakes all day long. I don't even notice. You know, I might be insensitive or rude or whatever, and we find that often leaders are. So it's not like you learn whenever you do. You only learn when the thing that you do causes a reaction in you. If you do something in a meeting and somebody comes up to you afterwards and says, I need to give you a bit of feedback. Did you notice the impact that had? And you care about that, then you have a reaction. So what lies beneath this, learning by doing, you can also learn from observing. You can learn from a story. So it's not about having to do, it's about having to feel, which sounds like a really alien and kind of soft and fluffy thing to say, but all learning is governed by our emotional reactions to things. That is the base level. And without something that impacts you, no learning will take place. So that's why doing is so powerful, because when you do something, it impacts you, the consequences impact you quite directly.
Yeah. There's lots of practical stuff in the book. It's not all theoretical models. It kind of starts, if you like, broad and then narrows down to here are some really useful tools. Here are things that you can actually implement tomorrow afternoon after you've completed the book. So can you just give us a couple of practical tips? Give us a couple of things that emerge from the book that you can put into place tomorrow or this afternoon if you're listening to this in the morning.
Sure. So as you say, the first part of the book, one of the things that frustrated me very much about the industry is the more I dealt with different practices and ways of working and different formats, the more I realized unless you've got fundamentally got an understanding of learning, none of these things are going to work. Not your AI, not your VR, not your whatever, your micro learning, because you just don't get how learning works. So it starts by kind of setting that on a new footing and say, well, if this is how learning works, this is what we need to do. And so probably the most fundamental thing is putting the audience at the heart of your design process. And there are lots of different ways of doing it. I'll give you a really good example, a very practical example. When I joined BP, there were 8 hours of e-learning modules. Only 300 people had ever completed them. And so I said, look, we're going to scrap all that. And what we're going to do is we're going to talk to new starters, people who've recently joined. And we're going to ask them, what problems did you face? What really helped? You know, what did you find really challenging? What really demotivated you? And we're just going to address all of those problems. And they range from soft things like, I just want to fit in. People generally, they just want to fit in. They want to know how people walk, how they talk, how to dress, what places look like. And then there are very, very tactical things like, how do I get my computer working? Where's my checklist of things that I should work through? And just by addressing those, we went to the most popular site anywhere in the organization, 1 million hits. Majority of people had visited it. So you can get a radically different pattern of usage from or activity from your learning system if you take the time to understand what matters to people. You actually catalog their cares and you help them with the tasks and challenges that they face. And it's incredible that you've never thought to do that. But, you know, almost every learning program starts in the same way. Here's a list of objectives, put them in a course. And a lot of us now sort of know that's wrong, but it's tough to make the shift.
It is. It's here's a course. Now let's find some people who could do it in order to justify my existence. Yeah. Completely the wrong way around.
Yeah.
So Martin, do you want to sum up for us or add anything else?
No, I thought the book title is quite interesting, you know, and I think I've loved the questions and the conversation between you both. But so it's how people learn. That's the first bit. How to design education and training that works. So the only thing I wanted to ask you, Nick, was this word training. There seems to be lots of fashion, you know, around the language, what's in fashion and what isn't in corporate learning. So everything's become learning and training has become something that you don't mention. But can you just help lift the fog on that and just, because you use how people learn and how to design training. You're quite clear. So tell me, how should we be couching that and framing that when we try and do all the things that you've just mentioned?
Yeah. I don't want to give you a long answer. I want to give you a succinct answer. But I guess learning is what people do. But that leaves people who work in training and education wondering what their role is. And I guess my point is we have a role in shaping the process that the learner goes through of learning in ways which fit them to the needs of society or the needs of the business. But we can do that in a way which respects their sense of what matters and leaves them with a sense of purpose. And this is ultimately where there's a lot of talk about purpose, but that's how that happens, is we start with what the person cares about and we shape it with them collaboratively in a way which leaves them doing stuff that they feel is meaningful and aligned with the things that they care about. So training and education today are nothing. They are just bureaucracy. They are just some historical accident we've ended up with because it was convenient and all manner of horrible reasons. But they could be this intentional shaping of concerns in a way which, on the one hand, means that businesses and organizations get people performing well. And on the other hand, and this is really critical, leaves people, as I say, with the sense that they're doing something that matters, that's aligned with their sense of purpose.
Yeah. Intentional is a very important word, I think, runs through the book. You've got to be intentional about what you're trying to do. You've got to be intentional as a learner. It's not just all about stabbing around in the dark. It's about focus.
Well, intentional is the opposite, maybe, of conventional. I like that because conventional is just what we're doing today, which is just kind of whatever. I've had people say this, very senior people in big organizations say, well, our L&D is just like what happened at school. you know. And I think that's a big hurdle for us, is that I even go to these technology conferences and I see Silicon Valley types, and I think there are people who think, you know, Silicon Valley is going to save the world. You know, one day someone will come up with an app. They're not. They're doing horrible things. They're copying what they experienced at school. They're saying, we've developed this amazing app that will shove textbook chunks down your throat at kind of regular intervals. And I just think, well, that's just going nowhere. So yeah, I don't hold out much hope unless we fundamentally change how we think. Then no, I mean, it's not going to be fixed with technology.
Yeah, it's a great place to end. I think we've got to change the way people think, and that's a big task. It's a big vision, and it's a great book that will help people do just that with every opportunity if they read it. So May, it's coming out. Watch out for how people learn. And thank you very much for chatting with Martin and me. Great to talk, Nick. Thank you so much. And the very best launch. Thank you.
Thanks, Nigel. Thanks, Martin.
Thanks, Nick. From scratch.